So I am here, Sam McClary, here in Bristol with Elaine McKechnie.
Hello.
We're here at Question Time today, where there's a buzz in the room, a nice view out the window. Apologies for my croaky voice.
And mine.
And Elaine's got one too, so we're a cold city here. Elaine, tell us a little bit about Future Space, what it is, and who occupies the space.
Okay, so Future Space is a science and tech incubator. We've been open for just over a year. We're based on the University of the West of England campus. And we house about 30 companies, all working in really interesting fields, all at the cutting edge of their field. Some are in robotics, some are in pharmaceuticals, some are in big data and intelligent transport and artificial intelligence, and lots of really, really interesting sectors.
Excellent. And why have they chosen Bristol, I suppose?
So some of them are from here anyway, so it was a natural option for them. We're co-located with Bristol Robotics Lab, so there's a natural cluster around robotics and autonomous systems. So you would expect that kind of natural pull from a geographic point of view. But what we've seen actually is quite an interest from companies outside of the region as well. Mainly for our specialist facilities. So we have got lab space as well as the office space. And the whole package where you've got connectivity with the university, you've got a really dynamic, interesting environment and community of businesses, and then specialist facilities all under one roof. I think it's quite a special option actually for companies. So yeah, hence why it's actually attracted people from London, the US, Japan, quite a wide range.
And obviously in real estate at the moment, the TMT sector, science, really seem to be the most active sectors out there, and what developers, I guess, want to attract to their buildings. Why do you think that is, and can you see further growth from the innovative companies out there?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting space to be in. That's where young people want to be. They want to be doing their own thing. You know, universities are doing more and more to encourage entrepreneurial attitudes within their students. So we're seeing more and more companies being set up by young people. But it's not just that. I mean, there are more companies around. They're growing faster. They're attracting more people and then inspiring other people to do the same. So there's a really interesting cycle where it's cool to be an entrepreneur. You know, it's exciting to be an entrepreneur. Funnily enough, in Bristol, we're doing really well at growing those small companies. We've got lots of incubators, lots of small space for companies to do their kind of up to about their first 10 or 15 employees. The gap we're seeing is that slightly bigger space. So from 10 or 15 people up to, say, 50 or 60, 100 people maybe, that grow on space is scarce at the moment and expensive and quite risky when companies are still at their high growth phase.
And demand in Bristol is really high at the moment. I think Q3 figures were showing that it's 29% up on the 5-year average. Obviously that space you're talking about is in really scarce supply. What needs to happen to enable more space to come on stream, and where is the space that once was there going? Is it being converted through PD or just through that demand?
I think there's lots of answers to that question, and I don't think it's one solution actually. Was that space there in the first place? I'm not sure. Yes, there are spaces like the Science Park, like Aztec West, like the Temple Quarter, etc. But that doesn't actually attract necessarily the companies, the small tech companies that have been interesting. It used to a really kind of dynamic, fast-paced community where they're co-located with lots of other businesses. The most successful places from a retail or commercial sector in Bristol are the kind of skanky places, the places that are in a shipping container or a refurbished building, or they've graffiti everywhere. That's what small businesses want. I don't think they're necessarily looking for the grade A plush offices because they know it comes with a price tag.
Yeah, I was going to say, do they want that because it's cheap, or do they want it because they like the sort of, I guess, the aroma, if there's a better word, that comes with it. That it's like, oh, I'm cool and hip, I'm in this slightly run down.
It's probably a bit of both, in reality. You know, it's a bit like when you choose a cafe where to get a coffee. Actually, Costa, I don't know about you, but Costa doesn't do it for me, because I'll get a decent cup of coffee, but if I see a really interesting independent place next door, I'll go there, whatever the price is, actually. And I suspect it's probably similar when choosing an office space. It's really important when you're trying to attract the right staff, the kind of, I was going to say young, it's not actually about age, it's about mindset and being entrepreneurial, innovative, broad thinking. That's a mindset, and if you're stuck in a kind of very corporate feeling building, I don't think that necessarily resonates with the culture of some of these small tech businesses.
So tell us about the future space. Obviously still quite young, yeah. They've got a lot of companies coming through your doors. Is there room for expansion for you guys? Is it something you can take to other cities around the UK?
Yeah, so, well, there's two answers to that. One is, yeah, I mean, we're about 70% full at the moment, so that's roughly 15% of where we thought we'd be by this point. So, yeah, there's more room for expansion. And, of course, due to the nature of what we do, we will lose companies. They will grow and move out. They might fail and move out. There's always going to be a churn, so we're always looking for new companies to move into future space. I actually work for a company called Oxford Innovation. We run innovation centres like Future Space all over the UK, from Manchester down to the south coast, over to Essex and Kent, and then obviously as far here. Our hinterland's in Oxford. We've been doing it. In fact, as of today, I think it's our 30th anniversary.
Happy birthday.
So thank you very much. So yeah, we know how to support businesses. We know how to provide a nice environment for them, and we know how to help them raise funding. Those are kind of the three pillars of our business. So we're testing it out in Bristol and seeing how people are responding to that model, and it's going down well. So yeah, I think there will be many more opportunities for us to come over the UK.
Fantastic. And tell us, if you can, about some of the most innovative businesses that you've seen come through all of your innovation centres.
Well, Future Space is still my favourite, obviously. I'll tell you about Open Bionics. So they are a company that had strong ties with Bristol Robotics Lab. They do bionic hands, so robotic hands primarily for children, because they're really low cost, they're 3D printed and totally customised. So you can have a Frozen arm, or you can have an Iron Man arm, you can have whatever you want. And there's a lovely little girl called Tilly, who I believe lost her arm, or part of her arm, through meningitis, and has had a prosthetic hand, you know, like one of the normal NHS ones for many years, and I'm sure it was fine, but wasn't really setting her world on fire. And she's now got a robotic hand, and within 5 minutes, can you believe, she was controlling this hand, because it's so easy to learn how to use it. It's transformed her life, I believe. She's now the cool one. Everybody, all of her friends think she's awesome because she's got this robotic hand.
Bionic woman.
Yeah, exactly. So they're just going through medical trials at the moment. They will be releasing their products to the NHS and various others shortly. So they're definitely one to watch. There's another kind of on the other side, that's more on the tech side, but on the lab side, we've got a company who called Pertinax Pharma, who was spun out of the University of Bristol and their dentistry school. And there's a common antibacterial solution called chlorhexidine, which you would see in germaline or cortisol mouthwash. And when you wash your mouth with cortisol mouthwash, that application lasts about 20 minutes if you're lucky. they've worked out a way of making that application last a lot longer and applying it in lots of different ways. So it can be in fillings, for example. It could be used in things like stents that could go in your heart. So, and it can last for up to years, I believe, that antibacterial process. So they are going to hit the big time at some stage. They won't be with us forever because they are growing rapidly and attracting a lot of interest from investors. So I think they're another one to watch.
And that must be a great feeling as for you guys having incubated these and seen them from that moment of birth and then watch them run off and make their millions.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe it's pleasing, maybe it's really upsetting as well at the same time.
I just love being involved in it. You know, whatever happens to any of these businesses, whether they succeed or fail, the stories are fantastic, and that's what gives me a buzz with what I do in my job. So, yeah, I love it.
Excellent. Hello.